Welcome back, dear Nerdy Show listeners, to Nerdy Show, in which we give you a recap of what happened at MAGFest. Hex and Jonna are with us. Hi, I'm Cap.
Hi, I'm Hex.
Hi, I'm Jonna.
And the track you just listened to was called What? That was by DJ Cutman.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I think that some of our listeners may recognize that noise as the noise that Colossus makes in the X-Men arcade cabinet game.
As they should.
I heard that sound a lot this weekend.
Oh, yeah. So that particular track, that was obviously engineered to fit in MAGFest, that samples heavily it is a remix of the old 90s X-Men cartoon theme song, but is littered with samples from the arcade X-Men game, particularly Colossus's power yell. And the reason John and I heard that a lot this past weekend was because that is a thing, a tradition, a mating call at MAGFest. if one person goes what? Sounding like Colossus from the arcade game, then your natural response should be to emulate it.
Yes. The room would just fill with
that
sound immediately.
Yeah, you told me about that, and I'm confused about that, and I'm very curious to know the origins of that.
I don't know the origins of that.
Neither do I.
I was at the opening ceremonies, and they were doing it a lot there, much to the chagrin of the director's staff.
Well, it was during the Earthbound Papas set. Mr. Nobuo Uematsu himself actually did the call.
Oh my god!
Yeah, it was something else.
Yeah, if you were at MAGFest, you did this at least once.
Jeez, I wonder if you knew what it was.
I don't know.
I guess you just heard everyone doing it and wanted to join in the fun.
Oh, I hope that's on video. And if it is, send it to us. So MAGFest, it's a music and gaming festival. We did an episode leading up to this event called Magalicious. And then we talked to one of the guys who runs it. We talked to one of the artists performing there, Danimal Cannon. And if you haven't checked that out, you might want to go ahead and check that out, because that'll be the prelude to this. You'll hear Hex and Jonna both, neither of them having been to MAGFest, and then you'll hear this episode where they share all their fun times and memories of being to MAGFest.
Yeah.
I wasn't at MAGFest. I was doing other stuff. But I don't think I was having anywhere near as good a time as they were.
Probably not.
So, quick history. MAGFest, Music and Gaming Festival, started 10 years ago. In 2002 was the first MAGFest, and that was actually the Mid-Atlantic Gaming Festival.
Oh, weird.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then it was more of an emphasis on gaming, but they had a few musical guests, most notably the mini-bosses and the one-ups. Now, the thing with the one-ups, that was their first live performance ever. So this year marked the 10-year anniversary of one-ups performing.
Oh.
And I'll go a little bit more into that later. But yeah, since then they've... that year was actually not even run by the current Mr. MAGFest, Brandon Becker, also known as Inverse Phase. He kind of just took over and said, hey, we can do something more with this. Let's have this be less about the gaming and more about the music as well, more about the culture. Mm-hmm. And so it became the Music and Gaming Festival and just turned into the event that it was this year, where they had 6,000 attendees.
That's a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Strangely enough, only 2,500 of which were at Nobuo.
I know. I couldn't understand that.
That is really strange. I mean, that... It's the guy who wrote the music of Final Fantasy. Come on, guys. I mean, really, wait, what the hell?
I know. It opened my eyes that you can have an amazing event like this, and people won't go for the music. They're not interested. They're interested in the gaming. They're interested in the panels. They're interested in just hanging out.
Well, you know, MAGFest strikes me as being something that's maybe one of the only other events that's very similar to Nerdapalooza in a way, in that it walks a line between festival and convention. I think that Nerdapalooza is probably more slanted towards the festival end of it, and MAGFest is more of a convention that happens to feature a lot of music things. But what having been there, what would you say is the difference?
The biggest difference is that it was a convention first and a festival second, and Nerdapalooza seems to be more of a festival first and a convention second. And so we're both trying to find exactly where we fit in all of that and doing their own thing. And MAGFest really, I mean, this is their 10th year, the 10th iteration. So they've hit their stride. They know what they're doing.
Would you say that the low not low, low, but I mean that the surprising lack of attendees at the Nobuo Uematsu performance would be because it is a convention first and a festival second?
I think so, yeah. And because there were people that there weren't any panels going on at that time.
Who would want to compete with that?
Right. And so, but there were the gaming rooms were still chock full of things. And there were over 70 arcade cabinets down there, including two copies of the X-Men arcade game.
Well, it's a must at this point.
Yeah. No, and they had everything from Centipede and Donkey Kong to the most modern games you can think. I spent a lot of time on Soul Calibur, and even though Player 2, the B button wasn't working, I still kicked some ass. they also had an area for LAN gaming, and they had some DDR machines, and everything you could think of, they had there.
Yeah, they had a lot of consoles set up with TVs with like a lot of retro games you could play on them. It was pretty neat. Now, one thing I did notice hanging out at the Random Encounter merch booth, a lot of times when they were trying to sell CDs to people walking by, they would actually say, "Oh, no, sorry, I'm not really into this music." So I guess those were the people that weren't there for the music.
Right.
It was pretty shocking. Like, how can you be here and not so interested then in the music?
One-third, if the Nobuo Uematsu performance means anything, then about one-third of the attendees are there for the music, and the other two-thirds are
there for the gaming or the panels or just to hang out.
Yeah. I guess so.
That's pretty crazy.
I can't imagine that those people would be ones that would travel as far as we did, though. They're probably local. Right. Otherwise, why?
Well, no, I met someone who's there more to hang out, and she's from Sacramento.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, she missed Nobuo, but she caught a couple of the other bands.
Yeah.
That's really strange. It's a dynamic that I personally don't understand, but hey, people are into it, so I respect it, sure.
No, but it's also like our motivation for going to an event like this would be for the music. Like, I'm like, I'm not going to miss Nobuo Uematsu no matter what.
Yeah.
Like, for me, a conflict is Vert is playing, Auto Scroll is playing. I don't know. If Vert is playing, I don't care about the panels. I don't. It's just, I'm not even looking at them. If Danimal's Cannon is playing, I'm not looking at the panels. Fuck the panels. It's Danimal. Like, that's just how it was for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if someone's like, "Hey, you want to hang out?" I'm like, "Yeah, but the Megas are about to go on. So unless you're watching them with me, no."
You tell them, Hex. Well, you know, speaking of panels and so on, it's only right that we mention that we're actually, if you want to interact with Nerdy Show in a convention setting, you want to check out some panels, you may want to head down to Orlando this February. Because we're going to be at MegaCon in a big way. Not only are we premiering the first issue of the D&D comic, where it's a four-part series where we share the origins of the original four party members and how they got together, but we're flying in Brian Clevenger.
Yeah, y'all!
So Brian's going to be with us at the booth, and we're going to have a panel. It's on Sunday at 3. That's Sunday the 19th. At 3 to 3:50, and it's going to be a really exciting panel. It's going to be moderated by Aaron of A Comic Shop. There's going to be Nerdy Show people there. There's going to be Flame On people there. It's going to be awesome. And we're really excited about it. We also plan on attending HeroesCon this year, where we are going to be moderating some panels. More on that to come. But HeroesCon is a mid-late June convention. Any future developments with us attending events, we'll let you know as soon as we can. We do plan to be at a lot more events, and I think we're already off to quite a start. We got some community stuff that we need to discuss. I think this is actually the first episode we've recorded in the new year, so that's cool. We've got a lot of backlog stuff that we've been releasing, and a lot of big projects we've been working on. So I guess this is my first chance to announce on the air who the winner of the December support drive was. That was a movie marathon drive, so that means we're going to be live streaming us watching about 12 hours of movies and having a good time on nerdyshowlive.com. And the winner is the Tim Curry-a-thon.
Woohoo!
So we're going to be watching about 12 hours of Tim Curry movies. We're still debating the list exactly, but I can announce the date that we're planning on doing it on. We're going to be watching the movies on January 28th. look forward to an announcement with all the lists and so on in the near future. But we also have some shout-outs to all the people who did support us during that support drive, because we're a listener-supported podcast. It's the only way that we can keep alive and kicking. And gotta give shout-outs to Big Bad Shadow Man, who donated to the topic Trolls, where we, in theory, watch films about trolls. He says, I like Tim Curry and I love the Turtles, but I want Trolls to win big because the Roosevelt Sniper doesn't want it to. He also sent us some fan art of Jennifer from D&D with the caption, what would Jennifer do? Same, still WWJD. So maybe it's a bumper sticker somewhere in our future.
Oh, dear. With a little caption, I will destroy you all.
It may be in, parenthetical. Big Bad is also, because he's a kind-hearted gentleman, he sends us a little something every time we do a role-playing podcast. So he gave us some support. Said, great job with the Pokeball with Pokeballs of Steelix. I loved everything about it. I love how Martin almost killed someone, and how Percy and Percy Pokowitz is awesome. One of the biggest sponsors of the support drive was Dead Already. Said, never had a chance to donate before, but I have some excess cash this year, and I like you guys, so let's make it a race to $100 on the Tim Curry-a-thon, just because I can.
Yeah!
And then the Roosevelt Sniper came in.
That son of a jerk.
Well, how much of a son of a jerk is he, Hex? Because ultimately he is supporting us.
Yeah.
Even though he's a dangerous man.
Very dangerous.
He made a video, very unnerving video.
I remember seeing
that. Where he was wearing a luchador mask.
Yeah.
And he intentionally tied the Tim Curry-a-thon, TMNT, and Trolls, and then dealt a finishing move in favor of the Tim Curry-a-thon. And we have a support drive going on right now for Dungeons & Doritos, but we'll get into that later on in the episode. We're going to start talking about MAGFest now and nothing but MAGFest.
Yeah!
I hope you, permit us to talk about our wonderful community, which if you haven't joined, you really should. Head over to the forums and everything. But let's get back into MAGFest. Let's do all MAGFest all the time from now on, 24/7 till Spider-Man's dead. What do you have for us?
Well, right after our good pals, who we drove up for 16 hours with, Random Encounter performed on the first day, their rivals, their arch nemesis, the descendants of Erdrick, performed. I didn't know they were were rivals.
Yeah, I didn't know this either.
And apparently they are. They are in a staunch competition with one another.
And apparently they chose each other as rivals without even realizing.
Right. Like, apparently Random Encounter was like, we don't... Erdrick! At the same time that descendants of Erdrick were going, Random Encounter! And so, that's a thing. And so... Their performance was phenomenal, and just as Random Encounter have their little unique accordion player, not saying that Travis is little or belittling him, Descendants of Erdrick have a flute player.
This is true. We actually have an interview with Descendants of Erdrick, yes, which we conducted at E3 last year. We'll go ahead and link to that so you can get a little taste of what they're all about. But I guess we're probably going to give you a little taste right now, aren't we, Hex?
Yeah, this is What a Horrible Night to Have a Curse, Part 1, by Descendants of Erdrick, from their first album, Downright Heavy. What you just listened to was Club Wolf by Disaster Piece. Disaster Piece kicked off the first day's chiptunes performance. It was interesting. The three chiptune performers on the first day all had accompanying instruments. Disaster Piece had a guitar and a drum set, and Revengineers, which went next, was a full-on band, similar to Anime Aniguchi, and then after that was Danimal Cannon, who rocks out with his guitar.
I call bullshit. I'm a chiptunes purist. Can't have anything else on that stage but a Game Boy. It's bullshit.
It was interesting. And then the next day, there was a bit more of purity to the chiptune set.
Good.
We had Chipocrit kicked it off, but Chipocrit also had a bass, which was interesting, which was really cool. And then Knife City, also known as Luke from Anime Aniguchi, went on, followed by Vert. And Vert, oh... Bird is a virtuoso. He is, as Danimal and I agreed, is a legend. And seeing him perform was mind-blowing. And I was really bummed that I had to miss Autoscroll, which was Chipocrit's band, because they happened at the same time. Anyways, so we are going to talk about what we were expecting when we went to MAGFest.
Yeah, you guys got to let me know everything, because I don't know anything. I wasn't there. Fuck you!
This was both of our first time at MAGFest, and so it was a pure slate. We had no idea exactly what to expect. Like, I didn't know if it was going to be similar to Nerdapalooza, where there was more of a focus on music, mm-hmm. or hell, I was surprised that it was very much more like a con.
Yeah, definitely.
The registration was set up straight up like a convention. There was a completely separate vendor/gaming room. The vendor and gaming room, you had to check in all electronics.
Yeah, that was a pain.
That's
in the butt.
Weird.
Not check in as give it to them, but have it checked in, because they were afraid of stuff being stolen.
Huh.
And so, like, I had my laptop on the last day, and I had to go in and have it registered. And then when I left, they put a barcode on my badge and on my laptop. And they had to scan both.
That's complicated.
Yeah, it was because of all those consoles that they had set up in the room, because they had so many different games and accessories and things strewn about everywhere. So I guess that was the best way they could think of to keep those all in check.
It makes sense. If you're going to do something as modular as console gaming, then you better have your asses covered. So, yeah.
And because everything was so separated, the gaming room and the panel of the vendor room were together, and the music room was completely separate, they didn't allow bags or anything into the main room, so it was awkward. I couldn't really bring my I didn't think of bringing my recording set, because that was all in my bag.
They allowed purses, fortunately, so I was able to.
It was my man purse, though. Why wouldn't they let me in?
Nope, no man purses.
Oh, that's sexist.
Denied. I got a question.
Yes,
I had
sir.
A question earlier, but then I forgot it. Now I remembered it. Does anybody do chiptunes on a Game Gear? And if not, why? What is it about the Game Boy that makes it more accessible?
The Game Boy, it's that 8-bit quality that is so quintessential with chiptunes. And so you can do on a Game Gear.
Gear's kind of, the sound is more in between, like the 8-bit sound and the 16-bit sound. I think that's why it's not really.
And I think it's also no one has made software for it. Yeah. Like, there are several options for Game Boys. Game Boy Advance, even DS now, thanks to our good pal Pixel Hate. But it's no one gives Sega the love.
No,
so lonely all the time.
I mean, people could probably make the music if they used like the Game Gear sound font, but there isn't any actual software to use with a Game Gear.
And most video game cover bands in the States, at least, are primarily Nintendo fanboys. I mean, you have to go down to Brazil to get the band Mega Driver, where the lead guitarist, his original guitar with the band was a modified Sega Genesis unit turned into a guitar.
Well, I'll be damned.
And he has since replaced it with a custom-built custom-designed Sonic Head guitar.
Oh, I haven't seen that one.
Yeah.
I remember the Genesis guitar, but I haven't seen
that
one.
Yeah, no, Nino of
out.
Mega Driver has since upgraded to something that is a lot more sleek-looking. Mm.
Well, all right, let's do this expectation deal.
Yeah, so I was expecting that I'd be able to run into Mustin, into to Vert and to Stemmage and the guys from the Megas and hang out with, I just thought I'd be able to hang out with a lot of people, and that happened.
Same for me.
The kind of expectations I was sad that I missed was like Steve-O and the Overclocked guys, because they were actually more there for the panels than for the music. So
yeah, they're well known for their panels. Did you get to check out their panels?
I did. It was sad though because it was Thursday night and I had not slept since driving the 16 hours. So I was pretty exhausted and could only stick around for half the time before I went, I'm going to bed. I can only take so much half-naked Dave brush fire. Brushfire was topless at the event.
That's hot.
Yeah, that's one adjective for it.
Did you slap him around?
I didn't get that. I left before, but afterwards, I the next day I ran into him.
Slap him around and you bully him?
No! I like Brushfire.
You do?
Yeah.
They couldn't tell after that last episode.
Oh, man, no, I love the guy. I love Steve-O. I love those guys. But yeah, no, it's... but yeah, my biggest expectation was a different layout than what they had. And I don't know why I had that expectation. I didn't expect such an emphasis in gaming, which is stupid, because it's the music and gaming festival.
Yeah, it was the same for me. I expected it to feel a lot like Nerdapalooza, because I've never been to any nerd music festivals like that beforehand, so that's all I had to base my experience on.
Yeah.
And it felt pretty different. I was surprised.
And then by no means am I saying that, like, oh, they have quite a bit to learn from Nerdapalooza.
No.
It's a different beast altogether. I thought it was very well run.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess my only complaint would be the schedule, and not even scheduling or them running behind schedule, but the access to schedule.
Yeah, the schedule on the site was a mess. It was really hard to actually navigate that thing and figure out what was going on.
And it was difficult to get a digital copy of the schedule, if you even had a smartphone, which I do not. And apparently online, it's difficult to get a hold of, like, the music schedule was not available in print anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So I missed the mini bosses on Sunday. No, Saturday. The morning show, because they had two shows. Mm. I almost missed Megatainment, which is the Megas performing with Entertainment System.
Mm.
But yeah, overall, it was a... My expectations, I feel that they were misplaced.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that MAGFest blew any expectations I did have out of the water.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I didn't even know what to expect with Nobuo's performance, but...
Oh, my gosh.
Huh. Oh, man.
That definitely blew my mind.
Oh.
Well, can we get into that? Because, in a way, that's the elephant in the room. I think that most people are going to want to know. What exactly went on with Nobuo Uematsu? Did you get to touch him?
I could have.
Did you service him in any way?
I could have. I think I could have. My favorite story is that it was on Sunday. I'm hanging out with Stemmage, Grant of Metroid Metal, hanging out at the Random Encounter booth, and who walks by 5 feet away but Nobuo Uematsu? And Grant and I just paralyzed, like, we are paralyzed with nerd, like, excitement. We don't even know, like, seeing that fanboy in him, like, lighten up, just... I felt that Grant and I connected over that moment.
Everyone in the immediate area there, I was right there too. Our jaws just dropped, and we all just, oh, look who's right there!
I don't know how to respond.
And he kind of came in undetected because there wasn't really a crowd around him. But suddenly, everyone noticed him there, and a crowd kind of formed right there.
He didn't really have much of an entourage.
Yeah.
I mean, when he first arrived and was wandering around with the rest of his band, they were all kind of clustered around him. Mm-hmm. And when I first saw him, he was kind of like flanked by them. So I was like, oh, that's kind of, that. This is obvious I'm just walking around, don't bug me kind of moment.
Yeah.
When I saw him walking through the lobby, but at the Bander Alley, it was definitely a situation of, stop, Nobuo, how you doing?
Just checking this place out. See what's going on.
That's totally how it felt.
Yeah.
And I wasn't expecting that. I was expecting you shall not talk to Mr. Uematsu unless you are at the Q&A panel and you have paid $50 or something like that.
Did it cost $50 just to be at the
panel?
Okay.
No.
So, I was going to say, come on. It probably cost enough to get in there in the first place.
They didn't even charge anything for the autograph signing.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So, no, the Q&A was phenomenal. He even responded really well to on stage. Like,
there's so many funny moments with him.
Oh my gosh. Like, they all had beers at one point on stage.
Yeah, a bunch of the band crew just came up and gave each band member a beer. And everyone was like, woo, to that.
And someone was like, chug it, he went kung pao!
Kung pao, really?
No, kung pai.
Oh, kung pai. I was going to say, like...
Yeah, someone in the crowd yelled, get wasted! And he held his beer out and said, kung pai! So if there's any question as to whether he has a good grasp of English or not, I think that shows right there if he knows what get wasted means.
This means he hangs out with lots of impressionable college girls.
Yeah, so I didn't even know what to expect. But with Nobuo Uematsu's set, when the song that one of the two songs that really stuck with me was the Final Fantasy V battle music.
Yeah,
when that came on, I just kind of paused and had to soak it in. The guitars were amazing, bass was amazing, drums were amazing. The keyboard, which Nobuo was on, it sounded strikingly similar to the original chipset from the game. And I'm like, if there's one man who would know precisely what it was, it would be Nobuo.
Oh, yeah.
Like, is he using the exact... Oh my god, and it was just this wave, and I'm feeling it now, I'm getting goosebumps now. I've described performances as being awesome, epic, amazing, phenomenal, all without irony. Like, I meant what I said when I say this was an epic performance. This was the first set where I felt it was a spiritual performance. Like, I really connected with the music on a level that I hadn't really anticipated.
Well, hallelujah.
Hallelujah. And what was funny, a fun story, is that the band, throughout the whole weekend, there are so many video game metal bands at this, and whenever they get the chance, you can hear them rocking out to Metallica. You know, every single one of these kids back in high school was rocking to Metallica, and they were in some kind of cover band that did a lot of Metallica. When I went to Those Who Fight, a new band that premiered at MAGFest, I was invited back to watch their practice. And for the first hour, they weren't having their mics working for some reason. They were fiddling with them, and the rest of the band was like, well, our shit still works. And so they were just jamming out the Metallica tracks over and over again. So it was an hour of them playing Metallica. And then Year 2000 X comes on, and they're doing their set. They're pretty freaking awesome. They're showing it like, yes, we are. This is video game metal done right. We are the premier video game metal band. And then second to last song, we're like, okay, time to change it up. This is Battery by Metallica. We're like, what? Oh man! And just when you think they can't, like, okay, what are you gonna top? What are you gonna top Battery with? Dancing Mad. Final Fantasy VI, Kefka's final boss music. The song that, when you play that, you're like, oh, yeah, you do mean business. Like, that song is, it's such a presentation to do it appropriately. So that you don't really even tackle it unless you know what you're doing. And there they were. They did it marvelously, and then Nobuo comes up, and it's like, oh, apparently, rumor is he was in the room, and he thought it was hilarious. He loved it. He had never thought of doing a composition of Dancing Mad with three guitars, which Year 2000X has. But he goes up, and his second to last song is Dancing Mad.
And the entire thing. All 14 or so minutes of it.
And they kind
of
had this mentality that Nobuo in his mind was like, oh, that's a nice performance of Dancing Mad you did there. This is how I do it.
It was amazing.
Oh, man. It was. So, the track to take us out of this segment, going to the next.
Yeah, which is, next we're going to be talking about your favorite memories. You've already been treading on that ground a little bit.
So I don't want to bloat this section and leave you with a slim section later. We were talking about Year 2000X, so let's play some music. This is Mega Man 3 by Year 2000X. We'll be right back.
Everybody, this is Charlie from Fangamer.
I'm Ryan, also known as Rofish from Fangamer.
My name is Reed Young, and you're listening to The Nerdy Show!
Now, say Fuzzy Pickles.
Thank you.
What you just listened to was The Legend of Zelda by Mini Bosses from their brand new album that came out last month, Brass to Mouth.
And I never get tired of hearing that name.
I never get tired of saying it. And I gotta say, one of my high points was watching the Mini Bosses. Because just as MC Frontalot is the progenitor of the modern nerd rap revolution, and Harry and the Potters gave birth to Wizard Rock, the man who, the band who pretty much let everyone know, being a dedicated video game cover band is okay, were the Mini Bosses. And yeah, there's no gimmick, there's no... nothing special besides the authenticity, the pure rawness of, we are a band that happens to cover video game music. We did this first, and you can feel it. You can feel that intensity. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It felt like history. It felt like watching a chunk of history. It's like there's this kind of magic when watching Frontalot perform, or Harry and the Potters perform, or the Mini Bosses perform, and I got to experience part of that magic. They even let they run this this forum called the Shiz, which is where a lot of video game remixers and bands come from, and they are all Mini Boss fanboys, and they let two of the members of the Shiz, two very talented members of the Shiz, come on stage to perform Goonies 2 for them. And, like, they took over the guitars. Sadly, they were off tune, and so it wasn't really listenable. But it was cool that they let their fans on stage. It was really cool.
So it wasn't good enough for you? It wasn't good enough for me.
Good enough, no. No,
but it was good enough for Love Hex.
I'd say, like I said, I mainly went for the music. But one of my favorite moments, this is I was running late for a panel. The one panel I went to, well, I went to a few panels, but this panel I specifically went to was the Bad Dudes panel. We played Bad Dudes in the past, and basically they are.
As in, are you a bad enough dude to save the president's daughter from the ninjas?
You are correct.
Cool.
It is Mustin and his hand-picked team of the best remixers out there. And so, one of my favorite moments, I walk in a little late, and Mustin looks over, and he waves. I'm like, aw. Aw.
And then he gives you the finger.
Like, you son of a bitch, why are you late?
And then he throws a tomato at you. And he tells everybody else to throw tomatoes at you.
And I pop, Toe Jam and Earl style. Oh man. And so after the panel, Dale North, who is one of the musicians that I'm a total fanboy of from back in the day, he was one of the original one-ups with Mustin. Mustin gets off stage, fanboys flock to him. Dale North gets off stage, he's just sitting there by himself. I'm like, opportunity. So I walk, I'm like, hey, I'm a big fan of your music. I've been a big fan since Project Majestic Mix, which came out in 2001. Is like, oh shit, you are old school. Yeah. And we shot the shit for a bit, and then I'm like, oh, by the way, listening to your music growing up, like in college, kind of helped inspire me to run this music festival, so here's my card. It's like, oh wow, cool, here's my card. And I'm like, oh, look at that, Destructoid editor-in-chief. Oh, Dale North, the places you'll go. So nice. That was really cool. I also got to meet a FF Music DJ who we've played quite a bit of. Ale Sean, a legendary video game guitar rocker. I got to meet Vert himself, and Vert was a bit of a trip. When I introduced myself, I'm like, hi, I'm Hex. I run Nerdapalooza with Hex. Oh, shit! I love you! I love Nerdapalooza! I'm like...
Has he been to Nerdapalooza?
No.
Oh.
But he's apparently heard of it. And my mind just went into this, no, you're not allowed to. You're not allowed to fanboy over me. Let me fanboy. Was what my mind immediately...
Shut up and take it, Hex.
Yeah, no. And I pretty much told my mind, shut up, take it. It's good to meet you. Yeah, no, I'm a big fan of your stuff. And then we'd the Dr. Mario that I was...
You guys French kissed.
Almost. And that Dr. Mario track that was the kind of nerding out over with Danimal in the last episode.
Mm-hmm.
Talked to him about that. He was like, oh man, I love that. It's so amateur though. I did it so long ago. I'm thinking of remixing it. I'm like, oh. So, Jana, what were some of your favorite moments?
Well, I honestly didn't get to see many shows because I was kind of a Random Encounter roadie the whole time. I was running a bunch of errands for them, watching their merch booth from time to time. But I really liked that shark that was flying around. Oh. That thing was so awesome. There was this like big inflated shark that was, it was like an RC shark that was flying around. Someone had a little remote control thing for it.
I think you can tell what kind of festivals they are depending on which of the fish varieties end up at the different places, because Moogfest had many, many clownfish and not a single shark.
Yes, there was a shark, and it was very funny. It would attract a crowd everywhere it went. There was one thing that I found hilarious that it made no sense to me, and my mind was kind of blown. When I was watching Metroid Metal, I was pretty close to the front, and there was this guy sitting on the floor reading a book during Metroid Metal. He was using his cell phone to illuminate the book.
In the front of Metroid Metal?
He was very close to the front of the stage, kind of in the middle of the crowd, sitting on the floor reading a book. And my mind was a little blown. But how
did he get injured? I mean, because there was a mosh pit, wasn't there?
I guess he was just a little away from the mosh pit. He was safe. But I noticed anytime someone would step close to him, he would start waving his phone around all irritated that they were interrupting his book reading.
What a butthole.
I just found that so hilarious. I couldn't let go of that. It was very interesting.
Oh, a band that I definitely walked away with as my favorite non-Nobuo Uematsu act, because, I mean, there's two categories. Bands that have Nobuo Uematsu in them, and those who don't. But Bit Brigade was...
Oh, I heard so many good things about them.
That was such an experience.
I wish I hadn't missed their show.
Such an experience. I mean, like, there's something to be said about that visual and audio connection, that connectivity, because mm-hmm. When the one-ups perform, during Sonic, they have a slideshow of Sonic stuff going on, but it's not in tune, and the focus is more on the music. But with this, it was an equal focus on the music and the game itself. Mm-hmm. They did a speedrun of Mega Man 2, and there were times where you could tell the gamer was just showing off. He was like, nope, I'm just going to run around. Let's put on Flash, and I'm running through here. Don't even give a fuck. There were times where he would just need, like, during the boss fight with Wily at the very end, he had Mega Man jumping in tune with the band.
Well, that is a show-off move. I got to actually stop you, though, Hex, because... I want to make sure that everyone who's listening gets an impression of what's actually going on. So these guys, they have someone playing a live game in the background of
the
set.
That is that band member's job. He is the professional speed runner.
Okay, that's ridiculous. And they are, correct me if I'm wrong, performing the music for every stage that they're going through?
Every stage, every moment, every load screen,
interpreting
every pause.
What's happening live based entirely on what their game player is doing.
Yep.
It's ridiculous.
Yep. And it's hilarious when they can't even get through like four bars of the boss music because they just murder poor Bubble Man.
poor Bubble Man. So easily poppable.
But, I mean, and he was showing off. He was like, oh, it's, I'm not even going to use Leaf Man's weapon against Air Man. I'm just going to use normal weapon. I don't even give a fuck. Like, I am the honey badger of the video game world. Like,
wow.
And I think it's, if I play too fast, then we'll end our set early. So I guess I got to handicap myself somehow. Man. So,
you should clearly add some kind of new dynamic to it, like, you know, some level of, like, shackles or some kind of pain torture. Like maybe chug a bunch of hot sauce while he's doing it.
Well, this was for Mega Man. They also, I know they do Metroid and Contra. I really want to see them do a speedrun of Contra.
Ooh. That would be impressive.
That sounds very challenging.
I know.
Sounds very, very challenging.
That would be quite impressive.
Yeah. So, Bit Brigade, I was thoroughly, thoroughly impressed with their performance. And it's one of those performances that I thought I'd enjoy, but I did not anticipate exactly how much I'd enjoy it live until I saw it firsthand. Mm.
So, if this was, say, like the Nerdapalooza Awards we do every year, and you were to give Bit Brigade some kind of, like, award, what award would it be? Like, standout actor?
Yeah. I guess it'd be the standout act. I guess I'd give it to them.
Someone who's not Nobuo Uematsu. Yeah, I guess it'd be the claws there.
The best not Nobuo award.
All right.
Now, the one-ups. I gotta say, they did two performances. The Friday performance was a kind of a tribute to where the 1UPs had once been. And it was a bunch of older tracks, including Coast of the Sun, which was their very first ever recorded track. And the 1UPs are kind of this band that they, once they've treaded water, they kind of want to move away from that. And since this was their first song released in 2001, I was pretty sure that they wouldn't want to perform it ever again. So it was one of those songs that I just discounted as, I will never get to see this performed live. And there I was, at stage two, watching the 1UPs perform Coast of the Sun. And it just kind of blew my mind. It was crazy, but... And then the next day... They unveiled their new look. They got rid of the white shirt and the black ties. The other bandmates said, told Mustard Man, on tour, we got a lot of questions about whether or not if we were Mormon, man. And we just gotta we just gotta toss that look. And so now they have this new look where they have black shirts and the with the white 1UPs logo, except they have this little thing where the logo lights up in certain patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really cool. It's a fun, and they're all wearing sunglasses. They're very Runway 5-esque.
Yeah, it was. I was gonna say,
and the track that the song that was just really my mind exploded over at their.
And that's not all.
I need a new pants afterwards. At the Saturday night performance was their incredibly jazzy and funky rendition of One Winged Angel.
Which is, that's an unlikely
right
combination of words there.
Right. Like, it was...
I take it that hasn't been committed to recording yet.
No. Well, I don't know if they recorded. I don't know if MAGFest were recorded, but they have not yet released a recording of any MAGFest. So that's another thing. So... but yeah, I'm sure there are videos out there. I haven't seen any. I've seen a lot of Dancing Mad and Year 2000X, but I haven't seen any, I even saw a bunch of Random Encounter tracks.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Random Encounter, and speaking of One Winged Angel.
Ah, yes.
At Nerdapalooza, they premiered a brand new interesting mashup called The Three Doctors, which was Doctor Who into Jurassic Park into Back to the Future. At MAGFest, they decided to top that because... Apparently, musically, the rumor is, apparently Nobuo Uematsu was inspired by Purple Haze while writing One Winged Angel.
If you listen to Purple Haze, the beginning's exactly the
yeah,
same.
Yeah, no, you don't hear it until someone explains it to you, you're like, oh,
this
yeah.
is new to me, and I'm very excited to check this out.
So, Random Encounter
did a mashup.
The track called Purple Angel.
Unfortunately, their levels were... pretty wonky, so it didn't sound as good as they were hoping.
Yeah, unfortunately, Random Encounter set...
they were the guinea pigs. They were the very first band to go on,
and
so...
And the sound was pretty horrendous, and only half the time was their accordion playing.
Mm.
But we all know how that goes.
Yeah. I mean, the rest of the performance, I mean, once Descendants of Erdrick went on, it was piercingly loud.
Oh, God. And they just started selling earplugs right then, too.
Yeah, no. But the rest of the performances sounded perfect.
Quark mm-hmm. earned a lot of latinum that day.
yeah, those are my major high points. I mean, yeah, all the chiptunes performances were fucking sexy. I'm walking away going, Nerdpalooza needs more chiptunes. Yeah, and so I guess let's transition.
Alrighty.
what I have is the original recording of Coast of the Sun by the 1UPs. and the song is as good then as it is now, 10 years later. And it's...
Well, Mustin might want to kill you for that.
Well, yeah. Well,
let's play it. Here it is.
Great. Sorry.
Go out and get some tacos, then I'll start.
You're all out of tacos.
Tacos?
Tacos too.
Thank you.
you just listened to was I Quit by Chipocrit. Chipocrit, as I mentioned, was you performed on the second day of MAGFest, the second chiptune performance of MAGFest. You performed on Saturday, and he kicked off the little before Knife City and Vert, which was a hell of a duo to open for, and he did a phenomenal job, and you should go get his album. It's free. It's really good.
Ooh.
Yeah. And so...
So now you wanted to talk about something in this outro segment that I was unaware of.
PMD.
PMD, yeah.
So I saw all over the internet afterwards, PMD. And I'm like, PMD? That sounds familiar, because Nerdapalooza has this thing called post-Nerdapalooza depression. PMD.
Oh, so everybody was subjected to premenopausal depression.
No, it's... Oh, that's... I guess so. We all got pregnant from Nobuo Uematsu.
But when you have menopause, Hex, you can't get pregnant anymore.
Oh. I think that's why we're depressed.
Oh, okay.
And so, so back in 2008, Z from Hipster Please coined the phrase post-Nerdapalooza depression. And I don't think he's been to MAGFest, and I don't think he's been in the circles of MAGFest afterwards or really paying attention to it, so I don't think he's seen the post-MAGFest depression kind of vibe that there's been. So it's interesting.
Firsthand, he hasn't experienced it firsthand.
Or seen it secondhand either, like from people that are posting about it, because they kind of ran into different circles.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was interesting seeing people refer to it as post-MAGFest depression. And it's interesting, this whole idea, like Z said back in 2008, that post-Nerdapalooza depression is this feeling that you just left your 300 best friends of the world behind after hanging out with them for a weekend. And so you just have this overwhelming depression, but fortunately there's a cure and it'll come in 1 year. And I think MAGFest is the same way, where it's like you just left your 6,000 best friends behind, but fortunately there's a cure.
And its name is Nerdapalooza?
And it's, well, that's what's interesting. Me and a lot of other people, like Doug from The Sauce and Steve-O, we didn't really feel that post-MAGFest depression. We kind of felt this excitement. But we felt that excitement of, oh my gosh, I can't wait to build for something similar for Nerdapalooza. I can't wait to make something just as great 6 months from now, and then 6 months later get to go party again instead of having this whole 12-month wait.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what sort of it's just sort of a general melancholia that follows the event. I mean, what are the symptoms here of these festival depressions? And there is some sickness too.
Yes, like how there's the pox packs. Yes. And the pax box and the mag crag Nerdapalooza. And there's when you have this many people come together and bring all their illnesses from their different respective corners of the states, you're going to bring some weird illnesses and they're all going to party, and no amount of Dr. Mario pill throwing is going to fight off.
And you know that hand sanitizers only make it worse.
Yeah. There are hand sanitizers all over the place.
That makes sure that there's going to be a superbug.
Yeah.
It's no good.
And so, but as for the post-MAGFest depression, yeah, it's this kind of feeling of, oh man, I just had this amazing party. I got to hang out with Nobuo Uematsu and actually hang with Mustin and the 1-Ups, and now I have to go back home and work. And I have a boring job where I don't do cool stuff. Like hang out with Mustin and Nobuo Uematsu. Well, she do work on cool stuff like I do. So I'm like, yeah, I'm excited.
Cool. Well, it's. I feel like you're kind of getting everybody a little bit hyped for Nerdapalooza this year, but you can't really say anything yet.
I can't. There's a lot of really awesome stuff.
Fucking tease.
There is so much cool stuff in the works right now, like at this very moment,
mm-hmm.
that I can't even talk about publicly.
I managed to catch a few tidbits. I'm rather excited.
No, you didn't.
It was a long van ride.
It was a long van ride, and we stopped talking in third person.
Well, I guess since we're all talking about decompression, we should decompress with some more community stuff.
Heck yes. Don't we have some more D&D stuff to talk about?
We do have some more D&D stuff to talk about. We have a D&D support drive going on right now.
Yes!
But this month's support drive is actually a Dungeons & Doritos support drive. Dungeons & Doritos is the tabletop role-playing podcast we do, and every now and then we get a chance to do a support drive. And this what this allows you to do is to basically create a one-off campaign for us. Any kind of sort of Monster of the Week episode. And then the person who's created the topic can provide a voice for a bit part character in it. So this is your chance to manipulate the lives of Jamella, Jennifer, VMAC, Chair, Lefty, and Barty. You know.
We are your playthings.
To a degree. To a degree. You can't make us do anything.
No.
But you can definitely put us in a precarious situation.
Yeah.
There's some interesting ones this month.
I mean, even if you say, I dare you to survive, we will take that dare. And we will go against it.
The currently leading bid, as of this recording, is a campaign started by Archaeus called Give Me Back My Shoes.
What?
And it's kind of a little derivation of the expression, the shoes on the other foot. Because it involves body swapping.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah, and Archaeus didn't have any starting capital for it, so Trench 88 leapt in, and all that capital so far is all him. He asked us, just wondering if you guys are putting out an episode this month of D&D, as I'm always looking forward to the next one. I've been listening to past episodes to get me through Tower Guard. 4-hour shift, and it's cold as balls here, especially so at night. He is, he's in the military, and he's in a foreign country, and he's doing tower duty listening to Dungeons & Doritos.
That's crazy.
The next one is The Amazing Adventures of Salsa City, which is actually a revision of something from the previous D&D support drive called The Amazing Adventures of Poutine Palace. This was started by Causa Baloo, and then Roosevelted by Berto Elcon. And it is... There's this trickster... I forget if he's like a leprechaun elf thing. I forget which what exact, you know, species of mischief making creature he is, but there's a trickster creature out there, and he causes people's genders to swap. It's not quite the body swapping thing. It's a little bit more personal.
I don't want to be a she-mac.
Well, yeah, you know, one of the main arguments on the forums is that you'll have to personify Hexena, so, and Hex is scowling.
Well, unfortunately, like we already said, I don't have to do what you say, you jerks!
Also, there's no guarantee that of the people who are hit randomly with this, because it's all dice rolls.
Yeah.
You know.
We could all change, or maybe just one of us changes.
Yeah, it's true.
It would be amazing if none of us changed. Like, what was that? I don't know. Let's continue walking. End of game. And you know what happens? The cockroach and chair, that actually changed. But no one cared.
Roosevelt Sniper came in and contributed to another topic that didn't have any funds behind it. It's called 'Twas the Fight Before Crunchmas. And it's a Crunchmas-themed episode where it's kind of like got a Whoville thing going on and a bit of a Grinch thing going on.
Uh-oh.
And that's pretty cool. I guess the real trick for us is going to be figuring out where it fits into continuity.
Yeah.
I've got some ideas.
Well, I mean, because we didn't really experience Crunchmas in the last, during the Christmas episode.
Right. Yeah. No, but Barty clearly stated that Crunchmas was months away, so it couldn't exactly happen in the order. We might have to jump backwards a bit, maybe even all the way to book one. We'll see.
Possibly.
Yeah. And then we have The Green-Eyed Club, My Big Bad Shadow Man, which is a story in which the club that Chair discarded for his shillelagh...
The one that I'm carrying now?
Yes, becomes sentient and jealous.
Oh, God. I don't like that. Because I rarely use that now that I got my spear back.
It'll be a story of a lover scorned.
Oh, gosh, it's been scorned twice.
Also have to give a shout out to some supporters who didn't contribute to any particular thing, but are wonderful people. Gary Galley sent us some money. He's awesome. Brent Burchard said, I'm not participating in the support drive, but here's $5 for another Pokeballs episode and two for the Skyrim episode.
Yay! Woo.
And Muckraker said, your Life Day spectacular and MagFest music episodes made all my holiday travel as enjoyable as possible. Thanks as always. And he's a very, very caring gentleman. He's one of the people who sent us some Doritos. And he says he's waiting to eat his co-ordered package of Japanese Doritos the same time as when we debut the next D&D episode.
Oh, that's awesome.
So get ready to have a very special flavor in your mouth. I won't spoil what it is for all the listeners, but I can tell you that it is exquisite. And while we're on the topic of D&D, figured we would let everybody know that if you haven't noticed online, during the Crunchmas season, we debuted a special Crunchmas gift, which is a voice pack for Neverwinter Nights 2 that lets you play as Lefty, Jamella, Jennifer, VMAC, Chair, and Galdap. Did I get everybody? I think I got everybody. Original voice sets that we did specifically for this thing. And it was all put together by a listener who suggested it to us. He goes by the name M, and he's awesome. Because we recorded all of it. We couldn't have done it without him. It was a really cool gift. He recommends that if you do need to pick up Neverwinter Nights to try this out, that you get the Platinum Edition instead, because it may play better with the character presets that he created. And it's the optimal gaming experience, so why the hell not?
There you go. So, MagFest ended with two performances of Dancing Mad.
Mm-hmm.
So there's only one way we could end a MagFest decompression episode, and that is with a rendition of Dancing Mad.
But which will you choose, Hex?
Oh, I got just the one. So our pal Careless, the accordion player for Random Encounter, also has a side project where he works with this awesome guitarist named Juja. So Careless and Juja released an album called Pixel Glass last year, and one of the tracks was a jaw-dropping rendition of Dancing Mad. And there is a rumor circulating that Random Encounter may be attacking this at some point, but...
but that's a 14-minute song, so... Yeah. We'll see how that goes.
They would need kind of special event to have that at. So if you like Random Encounter, you better pay attention to what big events they're going to.
Huh.
Huh.
Alright, well guys, thanks for joining us for this episode. Stick around a Nerdy Show for all the for forthcoming episodes. We'll be doing some more video games. We got some more microsodes on the way. We've got a lot of microsodes on the way. The Real Congregation every week, monthly Dungeons and Doritos, Pokeballs of Steelix whenever we get the chance. But it's kind of on a every other month sort of schedule, which is good. We can do that. And of course, come and visit us at forthcoming events, such as MegaCon in February, Nerdapalooza in July, and HeroesCon in June. Please enjoy
Dancing Mad by Careless Juja. Bye, I'm Hex.
I'm Cap.
I'm Jonna.
Enjoy.
It's me, Dean Wallace. I want to thank you for listening to this week's episode of Nerdy Show. I'm okay, and I survived more I deal with my son. I'm moving on, and I got a bright future ahead of me. Nerdy Show is brought to you by Egg Comic Shop, Nerdapalooza, and the Oviedo branch of Play and Trade. If you have questions or comments, please feel free to send them to info@nerdyshow.com. For more episodes of Nerdy Show, Dungeons and Doritos, comics, videos, and more, go to nerdyshow.com. You can subscribe to all Nerdy Show podcasts via the iTunes Store. Don't forget to also follow them on Twitter, @NerdyShow, or friend them on Facebook. If you enjoy what you heard, support Nerdy Show by telling a friend, or better yet, give them your money by visiting the Nerdy Store and picking up a t-shirt, or donate directly for cool, nerdy perks.